Okay.
Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. And here we are at Carl's Cavern as we go down and spelunk down into the depths of what will be a very, very humorous and wonderful show with an old friend of mine. But first,
please don't
I would
be
like
spilling
to...
the tea.
Yes, yes, Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
She does that every time I give her the whatever you want to call it. Who cares? Hi. So what we're going to do tonight, I am very, very pleased. Well, let me tell you this story. I was on Facebook about a week and a half ago, and an old friend of mine, her name popped up. And she's never on Facebook, ever. And I found out she wrote a book. Like, go, Paula, you wrote a book. And I said, well, we got to have her on the podcast. And Paula and I go back well over 20 years when I was first hired at Music and Arts, and we were both buyers. You were doing accessories at the time, and I was doing print music.
Yeah.
But we became very good friends. She's an excellent musician and quite a character, and she put up with me for 14 years in the cubicle next to mine, so she is a saint. And I'd like to introduce and welcome to the show Miss Paula Burchill. Nice to have you here, my dear.
Thank you. And no saint, but I did put up with you for a very long time.
So I thought what we would do first is just go and how we met each other and that. Basically, I was coming from Fresno, and I'd gotten a job with Music and Arts at that point. They were family-owned, and I was hired as a buyer, and my first day there, I met the head of the print music there, and of course Alan who hired me, and Lori who was, and then they sat me right next to you.
Yes, I remember that. Oh yes.
and it's just, we had a really good time. You know, I mean, I had my, just like anything else, you go to a job and you have some issues and so on and so forth. But I got to say that the people there were top-notch. You know,
oh,
really
absolutely,
good.
Absolutely, Carl, absolutely. And I think when you're dealing with musicians in general, you're not dealing with people that are of sound, you know, of sound brain much of the time, because we're all a little quirky, and you fit right in with that.
to say the least.
So how quirky was
that, what they call it?
So how quirky was I? Give us an example.
Well, pretty much every morning, I would say every morning, you came into the office and the first thing we heard was this huge good morning. And that was the signal. Carl was here every morning.
Carl. Good morning.
You know, exactly. Your big personality preceded you, and we knew you were there, and boy, we were going to have a good day because you were there, and you made things fun because in your job, you did a lot of the music research, and you did it very well because you found things nobody ever thought you would be able to find. And you found them, or you guided them into the direction of where maybe they needed to go, because they really didn't even know what they were looking for. But
right.
One of the things I always remember is that they were looking for, somebody was looking for the national anthem, I think of India. And, you know, who wants that? We're in the United States, but no offense to anybody, but you found it, and I still had a copy of it, I think, up in my attic, and it was called Yana Mana Gana. And you found it, and you sent it to them because that's what they were looking for, and you found it. And everybody else said, you know, Carl, you're never going to find that. That's not in print, but you found it.
Yeah, but that's actually me being, you know, productive. How about me being weird?
Well, shall we go into the happy dance?
Sure, we can go into the happy.
Well, there's a lot of things that make you happy. Of course, you know, funny things make you happy. And especially if you get riled up, then we know there's a happy dance going to be right around the corner. And sometimes, you know, maybe a good cup of coffee, or if you go out and have a smoke, or maybe you bring chocolate into the office. And or if somebody gets on your wrong side, that also gets a happy dance. And that's not that's almost a painful happy dance. But I've seen that happen many times. And it's so funny.
I used it as a weapon.
You weaponized.
You know, don't make me do the happy dance.
You don't want that
and
to happen.
And if anybody is interested in the happy dance, there is both a weaponized and an actual happy version on Carl's official Facebook page, Carl Kafer. So I'm telling you all right now, go to the page, that's K-A-R-L-K-A-E-F-E-R, Carl Kafer, you can see videos of both happy dances.
They're usually short, but oh, so funny.
Well, you know, one of the things I've got to say is that you're right. When you're working as a musician or any type of artist, and we do a lot of podcasts with film directors and that, we've got some very unusual people. And the thing is, that's what makes this life so much more interesting.
For sure.
And if I can add to that a little bit, I'm certainly more than happy to do so. And so did you, by the way.
Well, I think we all have a little quirky side. Like I said, we're all a little quirky.
Absolutely. So, so one of our things was Paloa. Now, I don't know if you still do this, but you certainly did it back then, was she would get a bunch of her friends. She played in the Frederick Symphony Orchestra and such, and she'd get a bunch of her friends, and we'd have a drum circle. Now, do you still do the drum circles?
No, actually, I sold off all my drums because I kind of outgrew it. But they were, like you said, they were some very fun times, and people remember that. And it was just a reason to get together, have some food, gather in a circle, and everybody just relax and kind of let their rhythmic side out. And I do want to tell this little tale that I remember. I was thinking today, I remember when you came to one of them. And by the way, you couldn't get along with calling him a drum circle. You had to call it a drum rhomboid.
Actually, I wasn't going to go there.
Well, you know, you just had to kind of change the parameters a little bit and put a little weirdness in there. But I remember out in my front yard, we had a circle going on, and we were playing some percussion instruments as well as the djembes. And you latched onto a rubber chicken, which that was your instrument of choice for the evening. And I can still picture you out front with that rubber chicken in the drum circle. And that's a very good memory for me.
Oh, my God. Okay. And now there's a guy making YouTube videos with the rubber chicken doing versions of things like Despacito and stuff. So, Carl, you were well before your time. Well before your weirdness, as it were.
Well, you know what? There are many things that I really appreciate over the years. And one of them is back then there were no cell phones, so they could see me do this shit.
Yep. That is funny. And we got into
disappointed that there weren't any videos of that.
Go ahead, Paul. You were about to say.
Oh, I was just saying, like, we were into a beat, and then all of a sudden, on, like, an offbeat or something, you'd play this rubber chicken, and it would just, it was like, in perfect offbeat or something. It was just you. It was hilarious, you know. You didn't miss it with that rubber chicken. You just, you know, you had it in the groove.
Well, you know, I mean, that's sort of me. I like to throw a little wrench into things, not too much, but just enough to make it interesting.
Yes, that was the rubber chicken. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about, you know, you retired from music and arts, And suddenly you're no longer doing drum circles. So you have to do something with your time and tell us what made you, you know, be interested in doing a book about tea time.
Well, I think I started it at about 2018. And this is when I was still, you know, I was big into collecting the teapots. And I was actually going to write a book about teapots. And then I had a good friend who recently published a book. And so I met with her and said, well, how did you do this? How did you get this book done? I'm writing a book about teapots. And she pointed me in the direction of this really excellent manuscript developer, and he lived the next state over. So we emailed a few times, and then we met, and he said, well, you know, some of your stories are very, very nice and everything, and they're compelling, but let's write a book about tea, because it kind of, like, runs the gamut. It would probably have a wider audience, a wider appeal than just teapots, and he was absolutely right. And so then I started researching more into tea, and lo and behold, most of my friends, and I had never known this, are big tea people. And they had tea parties in their house. They collected things tea-related, and they were all about, you know, the different kinds of tea, and they were probably very well-versed in tea. So we started having meetings with tea, and we went to tea houses, and we went tea shopping together. We had tea parties at their homes. And I learned so much from them. I thought, you know, this would be really interesting for the book to kind of expand on this a little bit and show how people really are in their enjoyment of tea, how that works. And that's sort of where it went from there. Not so much about teapots, but more about tea.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, a year and a half.
I do want to just say very briefly that we are talking about tea and not beatnik marijuana, okay? I'm just saying that we're talking about tea and tea leaves. Okay, never mind.
Well,
I'm being silly.
I was going to say, for those of us out there who are interested, how about we go ahead and clarify really quickly. Paulella just recently published her own book about tea, and if you would like to tell us the name of the book, I think that would be helpful, because I know some people are going to be out there Googling this shit.
Sure. It's called Tea for Every Occasion. The subtitle is A Book of Wonderful Ideas for the Tea Lover, and it's on Amazon, so if you just look up Tea for Every Occasion or put in Tea in Occasion, it'll come up. And it's a colorful book, and we put a lot of pictures in it, but it's basically an exploration of tea, and a kind of it broadly encompasses lots of facets about tea. It's not real dry. I've got a lot of humor in it, and it's not like doesn't get into the history of tea or too much about the processing of tea. It's more about how we enjoy tea.
So I'm going to pass this over to Rachel, because Rachel is our local podcast tea expert. And so, Rachel, what questions do you have for Paula about her book?
Well, okay, out there, podcast universe, when I'm not drinking bourbon or Dr. Pepper, it's tea. And this is going to be a really big shocker here. You all know I'm from the deep, deep South. I do not drink sweet tea. I cannot make sweet tea. I have tried for 36 years. I cannot make sweet tea. I really don't think I'm a true Southerner at this point, because I don't drink it. I can't make it. I spent my entire life.
I don't like it. Sam, I am. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's right. No, you can't even put green eggs and ham in there and make me drink it. I'm not a fan. When I'm not drinking bourbon and Dr. Pepper in conjunction, or crap tons of water, I like to dilute my water with tea bags. And so I just, what is it that got you into tea? Was it just the teapots initially, or were you a tea fan before this?
Nope. Actually, it was my mother-in-law, and when she would come over and visit, she adored tea. She would always request tea. So we started making tea for her benefit and sort of decided, hey, there's something to this. And so we started having it regularly and just started trying different teas. Of course, then we had to put like a side cookie or something I could find from the pantry. Had to put that on the side of the saucer and have that. And it just became a pleasure that we did for a good many years. And that's kind of opened the world of tea to me because she loved it so much. And I really was not that, other than iced tea, I was not a hot tea drinker.
See, and that's the thing is I was going to ask you about that is, you know, hot versus iced, because iced tea gets a really bad rep in the South if it's not just your basic ass sweet tea. And you know, you're going to be using the orange pico kind of black teas and things like that. But there's so many teas that are so much better iced. Like, I mean, one of the most refreshing things I've had is a mint and honey iced tea in the middle of a hot summer day.
Yes.
Preferences? Do you like any sorts of iced teas?
What you're describing, I love. And I also like to infuse teas. For example, when you're talking about a mint tea, I use a white tea and I grow my own mint. And my friend recently gave me some of her mint, which was much better than my mint for whatever reason. And I infused it in this white tea and put a little honey in it. And it was the most refreshing iced tea I've had in a long time. It was really delicious. So I would recommend to infuse your own teas.
Yes. Well, and a really weird recommendation here is if you're wanting something really refreshing, like you've been working out in the heat, do the mint tea with the honey and throw just a pinch or two of salt in there. You won't taste the salt, but it will help replenish your electrolytes. It's like tea Gatorade, man. It's awesome.
Yes. And that would, like, on any hot day, that is the best thirst quencher and refresher that you'll ever have.
It really is. So that's another thing is, I'm one of the random people I know that's just grown up around teas, and I'm not just talking about, you know, the celestial seasonings that you get at the grocery store. I rarely get an opportunity to talk to people about tea.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, I didn't want to interrupt you, but I'm just really glad that you hate sweet tea because I hate it too because I think it's way too much sugar. It ruins the tea, and you just feel like you're taking a gulp of a mouthful of sugar when, you know, you don't really even – it's just like, you know, drinking a soda. So let's taste the tea a little bit, people, and try to. And you can also use sugars that maybe like a raw stevia in there that sweetens it up a little bit, but it doesn't have to be like a mouthful of sugar and so sweet that you just gag. Which I hate, you know, like some of the fast food places that serve that sweet tea. Oh, my God, gag me. It's horrible.
You know, every fast food place / restaurant ever down here, because, again, I'm from Arkansas, if you don't have sweet tea, your doors are going to be shuttering real soon.
It's so popular.
It's so hard because my parents don't drink sweet tea either. So when they go to a restaurant and they drink tea, like they tell people, like, I just want unsweet tea. And at least 75% of the time, somebody comes out with a glass of sweet tea and it's like, no, unsweet. And they're like, I guess I'm going to have to go make a pot of that. I'll be right back. What's wrong with you?
You don't need to put, you know, like 7 teaspoons of sugar in it, you know. Sweeten it lightly and it's fine. Or you could put in another one of my favorites is peach or raspberry tea cold because it's just delightful. So you can also flavor it in that regard or buy a tea that's, you know, like a peach or a raspberry tea and you can infuse it with fruit if you want or just lightly sweeten it. And, boy, is that to me is so much better than that horrible sweet tea stuff.
See, and I am so glad that you brought up peach tea because I was telling Carl earlier, I have a weird story about tea, about sweet tea, and particularly about Lipton peach tea. Now, this is the mm-hmm. Lipton peach tea from, let's see, probably about 15 years ago. You could only mm-hmm. get it at the gas stations in the 20 ounces. Now, I was pregnant with my first child, and I was sick as a dog. I couldn't keep anything down. They had me on the maximum dose of fenugreek, and I couldn't even keep water down.
Oh, man.
For whatever reason, the only thing I was able to drink and not throw up was Lipton peach tea. And
oh, that's great.
I have always hated, like, the teas from the gas stations that you get, especially back in the day. Like, you know, they used to have the Nest tea and stuff like that. But the only thing that I was able to drink was that Lipton peach tea, and every gas station within a 30-mile radius of where I lived knew exactly who I was, because my pregnant ass would waddle in there, and they'd be like, baby, we did not get our shipment this week. I am so sorry. Or I'd go to another place, and they, you know, there'd be a new person there, and I'm like, I need the peach tea. And they're like, we don't have any. And I'm like, yes, you do. There's a case in the back. Go. Call your boss. Tell him the pregnant girl's here. He'll tell you exactly where it is. Because I had to buy it by the case. I couldn't even drink water, but for whatever reason, for almost 10 months, the only thing I could drink was this stupid tea. And I have not been able to drink any sort of fruit-flavored tea beyond that in about the past 15 years because, wow, I drank enough of it. I should have had stock in that company.
So I'm going to interject here.
Yeah.
And you were telling me, Paula, you have different chapters of the book for different occasions and things like that to enjoy your tea. So why don't you just give us a taste of one of the chapters or how can Rachel and I have a wonderful tea time? Tell us how we can do that.
Well, I would go into tea for romance, but maybe I'll go into something else. How about tea for friendship?
Definitely not that. I love him, but not in that way.
I know. I'm just saying, you know, it's a very short chapter because, you know, basically tea's going to, you know, make a nice evening for two people, and they're going to either, you know, like have sex or not. So, but anyway.
You know, that's how every night ends for me. I either have sex or I don't. But throw some tea in there, and that's going to make it good either way.
That was a good one.
Listen, I joined the monastery over 20 years ago. Give me a break.
Well, Tea for Friendship, I tell the story about when I was working at Music and Arts over in the distribution center. I noticed, you know, everybody thinks tea is a woman thing. Well, I noticed that there's all these guys that go in the break room and they're having a cup of, you know, a cup of something, and it's got the tea bag hanging off the side of it. So I realized these men are drinking tea. So I started watching, and then I decided, well, I'm going to, like, talk to them and see, like, what kind of teas they actually drink. So there's just a little story in there about the five men that I sort of kind of informally interviewed about some of their tea preferences, and it was really kind of eye-opening because they either like very, very plain tea, or some of them got into very wacky teas, and they had like little sayings they had to go with their teas, and most of them said, yes, I would love to go to a fancy tea with a lot of women, except one said, no, I'm not going to do that. Until we heard the rest of them, he said, yeah, sure, we'd go to a fancy tea. And he said, I'll go to the fancy tea as well. So, you know, it's just funny how tea is just such a relatable drink, and it can just, you can spark up friendships. You can meet new people in conversations that you would normally never have a conversation with over tea. And it's just one of those things that if you have it in common, it's a very big topic. And that's sort of what the Tea for Friendship chapter is about.
You know, it's really weird. I have actually, I guess, earned a lot of respect. but maybe some street cred, because I mentioned earlier that I do, for the most part, use tea medicinally.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And when somebody's sick, when somebody is really, really sick, you can basically get them to do anything to make themselves feel better. And mm-hmm. that is, oddly enough, the subversive way that I have gotten most of my friends and family into tea is because they've been sick. And
right. There's
one particular one that you can get at the grocery store out here. It's Traditional Medicinals, and it's called Throat Coat. And it's got some slippery elm bark and some licorice and stuff in there. It really does put, like, a nice coating down your throat. Not slimy. It just kind of numbs and coats and feels better. And it doesn't taste bad. Like, most people associate tea with kind of a bitterness. And
yeah,
I say that
true.
If your tea is bitter, you're brewing it wrong.
Yes,
it's like there's bitter beer face and then there's bitter tea face. and one of the weirdest things is my ex-partner actually was very, very sick one day and came to visit me at work. And I always keep some Gypsy Cold Care and some Throat Coat. And
mm-hmm.
I was like, dude, you're feeling bad. You've got to go back to work. I know that you don't like tea, but will you let me make you a cup of tea? I promise, just try this and you're going to feel better.
Yeah.
And from that point on, I mean, we were together for 5 years after that. From that point on, he was like, oh, my God, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Like, I did not realize that tea was anything more than something that you could just put sugar into mm-hmm. and kind of choke down. And it's like, no, it's so much more than so many people out there think it can be or is, because they just haven't been
truth.
Introduced to the right tea.
Right.
Well, I just learned that introducing people to the right tea usually happens when they're sick, and they're a lot more willing to drink it with you later when they're not sick, when you remind them, hey, remember that tea I gave you and you actually really liked it? How about you try this one with me?
Right, right. Well, a lot of people still associate tea with just, like you said, a Lipton tea bag and a cup of hot water. And it's so much, like you said, so much more than that. And, you know, just the flavor, there's flavors galore, and you can customize it to what you want it to be. And it can help you in medicinal purposes. It's also just an enjoyment. I happen to, you were mentioning your Throat Coat has licorice in it. And licorice teas is one of my favorite teas. It's just delicious. And it's just tastes like licorice. It's like licorice in a cup. It's really good.
You know, I was talking to Rachel earlier today, and I'm not a huge tea drinker. I'm a coffee drinker as well.
Yes,
you must remember,
yes.
Paula.
Yes,
you know,
I do.
Basically, I mainline the shit. But anyway, one of my favorite brands of tea is Stash.
Yes.
And their licorice tea is absolutely to die for.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously.
Yep.
And,
yep.
and I like herbal teas. I like not so much fruit teas, but herbal teas and licorice. Mm-hmm. I don't drink a lot of tea, but, you know, you talk about the different types of tea. I would just say that coffee, though much different, so you also have that ability, too. If you think coffee is just Maxwell House, you're out of your mind, especially
yeah.
these days.
Yeah. That's not even allowed in my house.
I know.
I like coffee,
I know.
Too.
Well, you know, and I'll be the first one to – I'm the first anti-Starbucks person you've ever met. I don't know if you remember, one of my favorite places was right near Music and Arts, and that was the Baltimore Coffee Shop.
Mm-hmm.
That was
still open.
I love that place. But the thing about tea is there are times, it's not often for me, but I do like an herbal tea. And I particularly like herbal teas and unsweetened teas during the summer.
Yes. And one of the chapters in my book is Tea for Comfort. And yes, all these teas you're describing, the herbal teas and everything, are very comforting. And if you find something you really like to put in it, for example, I'm trying to be more appreciative of green teas because they're for their health benefits. And one of the things I really like in it is coconut oil. And that just gives a little more substance, and it's just very, just has a nice, delicious kind of smoothness to it. And it's a really good cup.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever tried that? Some green tea with coconut oil, Miss Rachel?
No, I was literally just saying that I have never considered putting any sort of like coconut oil or anything in my tea, but that could be a thing here in the future. I do keep regularly. I keep a very large jar of coconut oil for various purposes in my house. So, actually, I now that we're talking about teas for comfort, I was going to say, I told my mom I'd totally be thinking about her on the podcast because I'm actually out of state right now, and my mom, I live with my mom and dad right now. Yay, mom and dad. She's very, very, very sick. And right before I got on the podcast, I was telling her, I was like, okay, mom, which tea are you going to have tonight? Go have daddy make you some tea. He usually likes her constant comment, but I told her she needed to have some of the citrus turmeric because A, health benefits, and B, it's just really comforting. Like when you're sick, when you're feeling bad, you just got that hot, steamy mug of something to make everything else in the world go away. And
absolutely,
I totally agree with you on green tea. I have tried to like green tea, but that is one that I've had issues with, and like we discussed earlier, you know, you've got that whole bitter tea thing. I have yet to find a green tea that's not too bitter for me, honestly.
I'm the weird one here because I love green tea, particularly if it's cold. Love green tea.
Wow, that's
and I'm into bitter anyway.
I
really like my coffee. I drink is Bustelo without any sugar, without anything, and like mainline stuff. So to me that's a taste that I like, and that's the one thing about tea, because with coffee you have some you can add chocolate and various things to it and so on and so forth. But with tea, you have a much more bigger palate that you can use. And you were talking about turmeric and things like that. You know, I mean, both Rachel and I are pretty much we're foodies as well. You know, okay.
Oh yes, I forget the macaroni and cheese you used to make.
Yeah, we'll talk about that before the show is over.
Okay.
But infuse tea with all sorts of herbs and things like that, you know, it's like you're cooking almost, right? I mean,
yeah.
And experiment.
And you can make it any way you like. And if you find like a green tea that you like something special in it, like a coconut oil, and it also works with herbal teas, then by all means, drink it like that. And also, green teas generally take a lesser temperature, like 170 to 175, so you don't burn the hell out of it, because that makes it just really taste terrible. And some teas, let's face it, some green teas taste like a mouth of grass. So I'm finding that I have preferences. Like I'm pretty good with Sencha, and I like the Girakuro pretty well. But I'm not a big fan of most of the green teas, but I'm trying to appreciate them more.
So if you had a favorite tea, Ms. Fala, what would you consider your favorite type of tea?
Well, I guess I'm a traditionalist because I like a spicy black tea, and I also like a masala chai tea. and I make my own, and I have a recipe in my book, and it's really good. It's got like some cardamom seeds, some cinnamon, some cloves, some black peppercorns, and it's all put in, you know, the black tea, and then you can sweeten it with a little maple syrup and a little coconut milk, and oh boy, that's good. So I like the spicy black teas.
And how about you, Rachel? What's your favorite type of tea?
Okay. I'm going to go kind of with Miss Paulella on this one, but my super secret favorite tea ever, and this is because back in the day, there used to be this little coffee shop, and it was a kiosk in the middle of a parking lot. It was this tiny little place. You couldn't go in. You just had to drive through. I can't remember what their name was, but it was Italian for, like, coffee gold or something. It was like, anyway, they made a chai latte. And I'm not talking about a Starbucks chai because fuck that, by the way.
Yeah.
Starbucks chai can eat my whole ass. It's awful. But they made a real chai latte. And I had to learn how to make it on my own because nobody makes them like they're supposed to. I found this African black tea that had been infused with ginger.
Oh, yum.
And so I use the African black ginger tea and I do it on the stove in a little saucepan with a little bit of cream and a little bit of honey and make a chai tea latte to friggin' die for. That is my favorite. Now, if
that
I'm just drinking a straight cup of it, oh, yeah, no, it's the best. It is the best. And you do have to use cream because it's just got that mouthfeel to it.
Yes, yeah.
But a really good spicy tea, like you were talking about, peppercorns or the ginger, and those are typically best served in a black tea base.
Yeah.
One of those with just a splash of cream in it. I guess I would probably do really well in England at 3:15 tea time every day because, yeah, put me some milk and some honey in that, or, you know, maybe sugar sometimes, but I prefer honey in my tea. Sugar seems to have, like, more of a bite to it that I don't like as much.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Paulella, I have a question for you. Do you remember Barb Collins?
Oh, man, yeah.
So Barb and
I,
Barb
and
I
loved. She came.
Yeah.
Yeah, she came to our tea in the park. Because with COVID,
exactly.
We couldn't have a tea in somebody's house, so we had it in the park.
So she was sort of like my adopted older sister. I love Barb very, very much. But one of the things she loved to do, and I'm just wondering if it's still there in Frederick, there was the tea restaurant.
Serenity,
yeah. Is that still there?
They moved from downtown to the little place near Baker Park. They painted the building purple. They had the best raisin scones ever. And they had wonderful teas, but the lady retired. And sold the business, and now I think it's a hamburger joint.
Oh, but
yeah.
But the one thing I wanted to bring up was the idea of what is an English tea time, and how does the book go into how to do anything like that?
I think the British tea time is actually 4 o'clock. Of course, there's, you know, get into the whole thing of high tea, low tea, cream tea, all that kind of stuff, which I didn't delve into in the book. But tea time, I think, in Britain was traditionally 4 o'clock or something like that because it carried them over from lunch into their later dinner, which was about 7. So they needed something to carry them through the time between lunch and dinner. And that was when they had their tea time, you know, with their little cakes and cookies on the side. And their black tea is their favorite. They like, you know, the Assam teas and the, let's see, what other kinds. I guess they like Darjeeling and some of the other teas from India. black teas, and they generally like it without sugar, but a little splash of milk.
Mm-hmm. And what I really liked about that place was you were talking about the scones, but they also had the little cucumber sandwiches and the little petit fours. And it was just like, you know, imagine me at a really high and fancy place to eat. It doesn't happen.
Well, the nice thing about tea time, you can use your fingers. You can eat
exactly.
Little sandwiches and scones with your fingers.
You know, and so Barb loved to go to that place. So okay. So about once a month or so, we would go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's lovely to sit down with a friend and just, you know, relax, and you're just in the moment having tea with somebody. You can, you know, the conversation can take you anywhere, and that's part of the beauty of tea time. It's whatever you make of it. And like I said, with a friend, it's just, you know, there's no holds bar. You just talk about whatever the heck you want to talk about. It's fun, and it's relaxing.
Absolutely. So I'll take it back to you, Miss Rachel. What other questions do you have for Paula?
Well, we were talking before the show, and I was hoping you could talk to me more. Again, we've been talking a lot about teas for like friendship and conversation. One of my favorite teas ever, and I told you I cannot remember what it's actually called, but there used to be this little tea shop that I went to out here called River City Coffee Tea and Spice, and they are no longer here anymore, that had what she called on the menu a conversation tea. And that was the one that we were discussing. It's for those of you out there listening, it is a tea that's basically a flower blossom that has been wrapped in, you know, tea leaves and things. And you put it in the bottom of a clear teapot, and you pour the hot water over it. And as it steeps, the flower opens up and blooms in the bottom of the pot. And it's basically supposed to inspire, you know, conversation. You talk about it. You talk about how pretty it is, how cool it is, like what it's going to taste like. And you're one of the only other people I've ever met in my life that's even heard of this tea. And I just wondered, you know, what your feelings on it were.
Well, it's funny that you ask, because I don't have a bit about it in my book other than after I wrote the book, I went to my friend's house and she said, I got this really cool tea. And I had heard about it, but I had never really actually wanted to find out more about it because it just, you know, it just didn't sound like anything that I would really be interested in. But she put this tea, made this this teapot, and it was a glass teapot, and she put this in there and she gave me some of it, and it was a green tea. And it's flat. We just sat there and watched it do its thing for 10 minutes. And it was just so amazing. And I thought, wow, this is really cool. Why didn't I know about this before? And it's almost like alien-like to me. It just kind of like makes all these strange shapes. And then it just becomes its own beautiful thing. And the tea, it was green tea. And the tea was delicious. I think because just that whole experience made it just so much fun. And so unusual that it was kind of memorable. We sat out on our front porch and drank this teapot full of this wonderful flowering tea.
Yes, and I just, like, that was an experience for me. Is she only had maybe two little tables in the shop, you know, and they sold all the things. They didn't just sell tea. They did have a giant wall of loose tea that was amazing. But, of course, they had the pastries, they had the petit fours, they had little teapots and all that. And I went there so often that she was really excited when she got some in, and she was like, look, normally I wouldn't do this, but somebody bought it and returned it without, you know, drinking it. It's still in the packaging, so I'll go ahead and give it to you kids. And I sat there at this little two-person round table inside this tiny, kind of dusty little tea shop and just watched this tea bloom. And I was like, this is the weirdest, coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. Now, the one I had was a white tea.
Oh, okay.
It was a floral white because it was a rose tea, which, by the way, rose hips make amazing tea.
Well, see, I need to explore that too because I usually don't like florally kind of tasting teas, but I like to take people's recommendations on teas. So,
well, and it wasn't overtly floral; it just had that nice kind of. I grew up doing a lot of weird historical reenactments and food and things, so I have learned the edible properties of flowers and how they can make your food really, really pretty, but you can also eat them because some of them have a nice flavor to them. And antique roses actually have this really nice, almost sweetness to them.
Hmm. Wow.
Which you definitely don't want to go to your next door flower shop and, like, pluck off a petal on a modern rose and eat it. But yeah. My mom, I grew up with a giant York and Lancaster rose bush in the front yard. And if you don't know, York and Lancaster, it's the War of the Roses, blah, blah, blah. It's the rose that they created to solidify the unification of the houses of York and Lancaster. It is also the perfume rose. It's what they used to use to make rose-scented things. Mm-hmm. But the petals on it have this really delicate, sweet, albeit floral flavor to them. And I'm pretty sure it was the York and Lancaster that was in the tea. But I have never been more impressed with something other than this weird rooibos she had there. It was a rooibos tea that each little leaf was hand-rolled into a tiny ball before it was dried.
That sounds like something Martha Stewart would do.
Right. Apparently it did something with the tea, like it when they rolled the leaves, like they took them between their fingers and rolled them into these balls, and I guess maybe it excreted some of the tea oils or something, but definitely one that I'm glad that I tried, and I'm glad that I saw, and I'm glad that I smelled, because the smell was amazing, but I don't ever want it again.
Yeah. That's interesting, though, because I know I'm in one of my cookbooks, Martha Stewart cookbook. She makes rose petal sugar, and she infuses sugar with rose petals. I guess it would be sort of that same delicate flavor, just give a little something to the sugar. So quite interesting.
That's actually the flavor of the candy Turkish Delight. Turkish Delight are rose-flavored candies.
Oh, never had that. Look into that, too.
Well, that's what it's. Most people have heard of Turkish Delight because of the Narnia series. Turkish Delight is the candy that the Ice Queen gives to the boy in the beginning to basically, sway his heart to her direction.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
It's this weird, like, hard-ish jelly candy that's rose flavored. It goes very well with tea.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I said it was disgusting.
What's that? Yeah. Carl, you're into big flavors though. And maybe we can take a little pivot here and talk about your macaroni and cheese now.
Okay, now I'm going to give it over to Rachel because I think Rachel also understands my love of cheese. So we actually had a podcast on cheese.
No way.
Yeah, we did.
Absolutely.
Well, it's such a joy to talk to you guys, not only being, like Rachel being such a astute tea person, but also that you're foodies too, because I think that's really very interesting. There's so much to kind of discover and talk about with food that's different than, you know, the real fancy or the kind of just normal stuff.
So I love to cook, particularly for potlucks. And I love to cook a lot at one time. And I'm relatively well known for my mac and cheese. So, Paulella, you have experienced many different variations thereof. So
yeah.
Why don't you talk a little bit about when I would come in with a whole crock pot of mac and cheese?
Well, not only a crock pot, but a huge pan that probably weighed about 10 pounds when you picked it up, because it was just like from bottom to top, all the way to the top, with this macaroni and cheese, the cheesiest macaroni and cheese you'd ever want to taste. He puts, I think, four kinds of cheese, if not more, in there. And he experiments with what else he puts in there. And I guess two of the most memorable ones for me were the one when you put the, what are those green, what they're called? What are they called?
Collard
greens. What
green.
Is it?
Collard greens.
No, that's another one. They were, it was on the tip of my tongue. But anyway, let me talk about the other one. There was salmon macaroni and cheese. And if you don't think fish and cheese go together, you have to eat this macaroni and cheese because it was delicious. and the other one, you know, these little round, they're like, not peppercorns, but they're, I lost the word. Shoot.
Oh, I know what you mean. They're not peppercorns. They're capers.
Capers, yes, capers. And you put capers in it one time, and everybody went, ew. But when you tried it, you went, oh, that's really good. So those are just some unexpected ways you would make macaroni and cheese. And, of course, the cheesiest of cheese went in there, like four or five different kinds of cheese, and creamy and delicious and so heavy. You could only eat a little bit, but you'd always go back for more because it was just so good.
Now I also was talking about Barb and that, but when I was, I used to, when I was, had the church up in Braddock Heights, okay, we did a lot of what we called stations, soup and stations, where we do Stations of the Cross during Lent, and I'd bring soup. And I remember doing one, and everybody, they always sort of like cringed whenever I did the soup because it would be something different.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I remember one time I actually made a pickle soup, and everyone went, ew, well, we'll just try a little just for Carl. The thing was gone in like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But you know, the thing about any food is that, you know, don't be afraid to try something new. And I think that's true of any of the teas that we talk about, anything. You know, give it a shot. It might fail, but it might be good. You don't know.
Exactly. And that's the beauty of it. I tell people when they come here to my house and we drink tea, I said, if you don't like it, you either dump it down the sink or take it outside and pour it in the grass, and we'll try again.
Absolutely. You know, when I was growing up, my dad used to say, you know, you could try anything on the menu you want, but if you try it, you have to, if not finish it, that's all you get. Okay?
Yeah.
but you could try anything you want. And I was the only one of the three kids that was adventurous. So I've always been that one.
Yeah. Well, you're probably glad you are, because you probably tasted some things you would have not normally tasted.
Oh, that's for sure. Probably things that nobody else wants to taste either. But that's okay. Rachel, you have any comments on my cheese fetish?
Did I what?
Do you have any comments on my cheese fetish?
Yeah, where's my annual cheese delivery, bitch? Okay, so Carl and I refuse to take money from each other for things, but as a thank you, like, he'll send me boxes of cheese from Cuba Cheese Company.
Okay.
So he's not thanking me for anything currently, but I am missing out on some cheese right now. I'm very sad about this. He is the first and only person.
Take it. I'll get an order for you. I have to say that
his cheese fetish is so much so that when he heard that I had never had Limburger but had always wanted to try it, the first cheese box he ever sent me did have a Limburger spread in it. And by the way, I loved it. Everybody else in the house hated me.
Well, you know, I do remember Carl always liking the stinky cheeses, like the Gorgonzola and all this. I do remember that. And even he might have even put a little bit of that in his macaroni and cheese on occasion.
I've done that before.
For the stinky. See, I think that's delicious.
Okay, I have to explain this, okay? When we moved to Bradford, Pennsylvania, we had the music store, we were doing school runs within a 50, 60-mile radius. And there were two cheese factories. One was in Cuba, New York. The other one was in Shingle House. Shingle House was a little closer to us, so we started there, but they went out of business. But my dad would order these 10-pound blocks of cheddar cheese, extra sharp. There were five of us in the household, and basically it was gone within a week.
Yeah.
Maybe 10 days at most. My mother made my father buy a small refrigerator just for his Limburger and stinky cheeses.
Yeah, forget the guy
okay.
with the milk. Just give us cheese.
You know, and on Sunday, we didn't sit down. With one of those boards, it'd be all different types of cheeses and sausages and crackers. And that's what we had mm-hmm. for dinner while we were watching football, my dad and I. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it was ingrained in me how much I love cheese.
Yeah.
So yeah, to say the least. But now getting back to tea, we still have a couple minutes yet, Paula. Tell us a little bit more about the book. Maybe go through one more chapter. And also, don't forget to tell us where we can buy it, who publishes it, and all that sort of good stuff, too.
Okay. Well, before I do that, I'd like to ask Rachel, first of all, if her after drinking all that peach tea, if her kid turned out okay, and then if she still drinks it.
I have not touched a peach tea since the day I gave birth. It's funny because somebody was buying some yesterday at my other job. I don't get paid enough to work here at the podcast, so I have to have a real job now. So I was at my other job yesterday, and somebody was buying peach tea, and it was funny because I was like, wow. I see you in here every day buying this stuff. Like, how is it? I can't even drink it, but it's kind of nostalgic for me. And it made me think about it. And I told him, I was like, I'm actually doing a podcast on tea tomorrow, of all things. I haven't touched a peach tea since then. Kind of like when one of my first restaurant jobs ever, I worked at Johnny Carino's Country Italian Kitchen, Carino's, which I don't think we have those anymore. We would make flavored teas. Like, that was one of the things that they really touted on the menu was their, you know, specialty made flavored teas. You could get a blackberry, get a peach. And people were so snobby about it. They were like, no, I need the blackberry tea. I need the peach tea. It's so, you know, far superior to whatever tea it is that you use for your regular sweet tea. What they didn't know is that it was literally just a couple of pumps of the Mariani syrup in regular iced tea that we made.
Well, that's, yeah, syrup sweetens up and makes it go a long way. And actually, one of the best teas I've ever tasted is from the fellow at work that I wrote about in my Men at Work chapter. He used, well, his peach tea is like one of the best, and I don't know how he makes it, he told me, but I think he did something extra to it. He used real peaches in it, and he used, I don't know what kind of sugar, and this wonderful kind of peach black tea. And, oh, my God, it was the best tea, I think, best peach tea I've ever had, but I cannot recreate it for some reason. But, yeah, if you do it right, you know, it could be really, really a good tea. It's just, I don't know, something about it. Peach and raspberry are just yummy.
If I could ever get something made like that, I would probably drink a peach tea again. But to this day, peach tea is associated with many long nights of horrible, horrible acid reflux and puking until I can get the tea. And so I never want to see peach tea again, ever, unless maybe it's kind of like that.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, well, it does depend who makes it, how you make it, you know, under what circumstances, but yeah. It's just like any other food. Sometimes you have a bad memory associated with it or something that, you know, you may not want to have for a long while. You know, my husband's like that with lemon cookies. So, you know, he hates a lemon cookie, but, you know, just associates it with something when he threw up as a kid. But anyway.
Exactly. Kind of like some people can't drink tequila anymore because of that one bad night. I can't drink peach tea anymore because of that one bad year.
Yes. Well, if your child turned out fine, well, then it was all worth it, you know? I'm sure they
exactly.
probably, you know, and maybe they like peach tea. I don't know. How old are they?
It's an interesting story. My first pregnancy was actually given up for adoption, but from what I know, they are doing very, very well. Very well taken care of. And I don't know if they like peach tea or not, but I know that my two children that I do have, they won't drink it to save their lives. I'm pretty sure I drank enough of it that my grandchildren won't be able to drink peach tea.
Well, I think that's the beauty of, you know, tea. It's just like in my first chapter, I say, well, you know, or my introduction, you have to figure out how tea comes to you. Was it something that was in your family, or have you decided as an adult that you really enjoy this? And how did tea come to you? And because you
I
have
see, that's
person
kind of what I was asking you in the beginning.
Exactly, you were asking me, and that's, you know, it kind of came to me in a sideways way. I didn't, like, you know, nobody in my family actually drank it, other than when my mother-in-law asked for it specifically, and I don't know how old I was, but I had never been a tea drinker, and now I drink it every day.
There you go.
All right. I actually, and this is the last thing for me personally, and this is going to tie in with Carl, is I found something a few years ago. I shop a lot at Asian grocery stores because, A, they have some of the best weird produce I've ever seen in my life. I love it. But, B, being in the South, that's one of the only places that I can find some of the really strange teas that I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, I use tea medicinally a lot.
Right.
And parsley tea is really great if you're having lady issues.
Mm-hmm.
I'll leave it at that, lady issues. Parsley tea is amazing. But you can't go to the grocery store and get parsley tea. And I'm sorry, but you can't just go to the grocery store and get a bunch of Italian parsley or something and make yourself some parsley tea. So I found a tea that just it's my favorite. It's my favorite, like, daily tea.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called why can't I remember all of a sudden? It's just called milk tea.
Oh, okay. Hmm.
And I know that the box, because most of it's in some sort of weird Asian writing, so I don't obviously understand it. But it says 3:15 p.m. tea time anytime.
Hmm. Okay.
And it's got so many weird flavors. It's It's got one called Rose Fruity. It's got a coffee flavored. It's got an original flavor, which is kind of like a lighter coffee version maybe. But mm-hmm. it's an already slightly sweetened tea with the cream in it all in the bag. You just dunk it in your cup, and suddenly you have a cup of perfectly sweetened creamed tea. And the coffee version is amazing. It does taste like a perfect cup of coffee for me.
Wow.
I like my coffee. I like my girly coffee, so, you know, cream and sugar in it.
Yeah.
But their Earl Grey one, they have an Earl Grey one that is to die for.
Cool.
And that is my favorite tea. Of all of the teas, that is the one that I can drink daily. I just can't always find it.
I'm going to go look for that. Yeah.
You should. And I will try and find you on Facebook or however after the show, and I will send you a picture of the box or something so that you know what you're looking for, because I feel ridiculous for not remembering the actual brand name. But I think the brand name is something along the lines of 3:15 tea time.
Okay. All right. Huh. Well, you know, that's another part of the beauty of tea, because you can't know it all. I mean, you know, you're always finding new teas, new names of teas, new brands of teas, and it's just like it's unending, and there's so much to explore, and that's the fun of it. That's really the cool part of it.
Absolutely.
That is. I mean, as much as I love coffee, it's not nearly as diverse and inexpensive as tea can be.
Yeah. So,
Paula, I was just going to say, it's such a pleasure to have you on and to reconnect. It really is.
Oh, my gosh, it's incredible. I'm kind of in disbelief that this is happening, but I think it's wonderful. And it's so good to reconnect with you, Carl. And, Rachel, I have loved talking to you. That you are just an amazing person, and I just love everything you've told me about tea, and it's just kind of a whole new world has been opened up for me.
Oh, well, I'm really glad, too. I don't get to talk about my love of tea. Carl didn't even know how much I love tea until a few weeks ago, and he was like, hey, what do you know about tea? And I was like, you're going to have to be real specific, motherfucker. Like, what do you want to know that I know about tea?
Yeah. Yeah, just the exploration of tea is one of the joys that I've had these last couple years, and talking to other people who they'll be happy to recommend or take you out to tea and, you know, tell you what they like to drink. And it's just, it's a sharing and it's a tasting kind of a thing. And it's just something that you can really get into with other people, as well as just sitting at your kitchen table and just having a cup by yourself. It's just,
that's the nice thing. It's an exploration. It's a new area to explore. And you're right about the diversity. It's much more diverse than coffee. Though coffee, I think, is underrated in diversity. But nonetheless, it's a wonderful thing to do. And I say to all of our listeners, go try some tea. And by the way, buy Paula's book. So right now, Paula, it's time to pimp your book out. Come on, give us a promotion.
All right, Tea for Every Occasion, a book of wonderful ideas for the tea lover. It's on Amazon, $24.95, and it's loaded with color and all kinds of ideas about how to make how to up your enjoyment with tea. It's informational and has nice stories about friends who enjoy tea and some of the very interesting things that they do around tea or with tea. And I think people would enjoy the book. So, you know, if you want to go buy it, please do.
I'm getting that as Christmas presents for a bunch of people I know. Just saying.
Well, you know,
and I did just look it up.
There it is. And, you know, I've been thinking about if I would ever write a second book, what kinds of things I would put in it. And Rachel, what you're telling me here is par for the course for, you know, a second writing, because there, like Carl said, there's so many explorations of tea, and people aren't going to know these things unless somebody talks about it, or if you bring it to somebody's attention. I didn't know about, you know, what you're describing to me, you know, this, you know, various kinds
I
of teas.
Just
and
looked
I
it up.
Buy them. I want to go out and tomorrow
called,
and find them and buy them.
It's literally called 315 tea.
315
like
tea.
The time.
Okay.
315.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. The rest of the box is in a language that I can't read, but it is, once I've looked it up, it's Taiwanese milk tea.
Okay.
315 tea.
All right.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Like, that seems like there could be a definite exploration of some stuff in the future, and I need to get your information so I can send you random teas.
Oh, absolutely. That would be awesome. That'd be awesome, because, you know, there's so many wonderful, healthful teas out there, and that's what I was thinking about in the second book, if I ever come to fruition, if I ever feel like I need to do something that's worthwhile, instead of putting around my house all day, I would write about more like the healthful teas and that side of things, because people have things that they like to, rather than going to the doctor and pop a pill at every little thing, try to find an herbal way or a tea to alleviate some of the symptoms and try to help you through it, so you don't have to, so you can get through just very things like a sore throat, or maybe you're having cramps, or, you know, like whatever,
you need to talk to me about that, because I have a tea for everything that generally helps people. Like, I need people to be honest with me, and they'll be honest, like, nah, I don't feel any better, or wow, that's amazing. But I do have a super special secret hot toddy recipe that does involve tea.
Nice.
And it is curative and restorative to a point that people think I'm fucking crazy until I make it for them, and they're like, oh my God, I feel better than I've felt in days. And I'm like, well, you know, there's a little whiskey in there. There's a little honey. There's a little orange juice, but there's also some really good tea.
Yes. Yeah.
But the tea's important.
Yes, it is.
Nice. It is. So folks, what I'm going to do at this point is we're going to do a little bit of housekeeping, and we're then going to say goodnight. But before we do that, I just wanted to say, I wanted to ask Paola a question. Now
okay.
that you've met Rachel, do
yes.
I have, like, the perfect co-host or what?
I was thinking that all along, that you two are, like, amazing together, because you kind of are just, like, on a parallel universe or something. You know, you just go together. I don't know how else to say it, but yes, it's definitely a good match. I'll put it that way.
He's definitely my brother from another mothership.
There you go. There you go. Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, well, how many times did I say that I was waiting for the mothership to pick me up from music and arts? I know several times.
Yes, that's true. So you have found that, and it's, you know, it's excellent matchup, and I hope you continue to do this for a real long time, because it's very entertaining.
Well, of course, we have entertaining
guests, like
too.
You.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So what we do now is a little bit of what we call housekeeping. Yes, I know. But that being said, on Deviant Legion, this Friday, Adam Ferenz at the Cathode Ray Mission, we will be doing a retrospective on the Red Riding Trilogy, which is a three TV movie set from England. And this is part of Noirvember. Because these are modern noirs from, and the first one is in 1974 set in 74. Second one is in 1980. The third one is set in 83. And these were actually produced in the late 2000s, these films. And so we're going to be doing that on Friday. On Sunday, we will be doing a retrospective of course, one of our most esteemed actors, Dean Stockwell, passed away. And we're going to be doing a retrospective. And Adam and I will be on there on Saturday. Unfortunately, we have a slightly sad announcement to make about Saturday. Rachel, I'll let you do this one.
Yes, I am very, very sorry, all of my Alice-y friends. I'm sure you heard me mention that I do have like a real job now that pays me money, and some things happened, and I will be working on Saturday night, so we are going to have to reschedule our who, what, where, why, when, and how rabbit hole show, TBD at this point, because my schedule's a little crazy, and I'm very sorry about that, but I have already seen some of the music that we have picked out for the show, and I'm really excited about it, so it may be on a different day at a different time, but it will be here in the near future. And please, please accept my deepest, sincerest apologies, but also, baby got to make some money. So
absolutely.
Papa needs a new pair of gym socks. Come on now.
And next Tuesday, or this coming Tuesday, actually, we have part two of November on the ISF podcast, Incredibly Strange Films, and we will be doing what I like to call post-classic noirs. And again, we will have Patrick Crane with me, and also we will have Brian Wallinger, but we will also have another special guest who has confirmed today, and that would be my former partner in crime, Stephen Ron Keough will be joining us for that episode also. So we'll be doing that next Tuesday. So that's what we have planned so far. I can also tell you that we will be doing a couple of watches, commentary watches, particularly food-related films. I know that we need to schedule Rachel's when she is free, and that's going to be like water for chocolate. I'm going to be doing Big Night. And near Thanksgiving, I can guarantee you that we'll be doing a commentary watch of my favorite pro-Christian anti-drug mutated turkey monster movie, and that, of course, would be Blood Freak. We'll be doing that. We'll be doing that sometime near Thanksgiving. So that's what we have planned.
It's the anniversary of one of my first commentary watches, by the way. We did Blood Freak. Just wanted
and
to
actually, know. It's my anniversary also, because that was my first podcast with Stephen 7 years ago. Or 8 years ago, excuse me, 8 years ago. So, yes. So we'll be doing that. And Paula, I wanted to again thank you so much for being on. It is such a pleasure to reconnect with you, my dear.
Oh, it has been my pleasure too, Carl. It's been so much fun. Thank you so much. And Rachel, so great to meet you. And it was just a wonderful time. Thank you so much.
And do me a favor also, if you run into anyone from Music and Arts, and particularly Rob, say hello to Rob for me, your husband. And it's just
if she runs
really,
into her
really
husband
nice
at any point,
me.
You want her to say hello to him?
What was
sure.
that?
Sure.
I said, I was like, oh, if she runs into her husband at any point, you want her to say hello to him for you?
Yeah, we passed
yes.
the night again. So.
Well, whatever. Come on. It's late for me. It's time for me to go to bed. Give me a break. Paula, absolutely wonderful to have you on. Please write another book so we can have you back on, or maybe we'll just get a bunch of music and arts people and they could all tell really bad stories about me. Okay.
I like that idea. Yes. That was
Shall
amazing.
We tell her what TC knows about me or not?
Oh, no. She'll figure it out.
No. Okay. Never mind.
That'll be for another time.
Well, we want to thank you very much for listening to us. Again, Paula, just give us the name of the book and Amazon, please.
Yes, Tea for Every Occasion, Amazon.
And it's Paulella Burchill, PaulellaBirchill. And there you go. All right, send us out, Rachel. Thank you very much.
All right, you guys have the greatest, best of your nights, and good night.
Good night. Don't let the bed button bite.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Bye.